Wow, how about a little bit of the boss this morning at Crosswind? Who would have expected that? You know, when we think, whenever I hear this song, it reminds me of what John Stewart said about Rick Springsteen when he was inducted into the Kennedy Center Honors Program. Here's what he said. He said, whenever I see Bruce Springsteen do anything, he empties the tank every time. And the beautiful thing about this man is he empties the tank for his family, he empties the tank for his art, he empties the tank for his audience, and he empties the tank for his country. And we, on the receiving end of that beautiful gift, are ourselves rejuvenated, if not redeemed. And I thought about that. I thought, man, that's the kind of life that I want to live. Man, I want to live in a way that, you know, I'm always emptying the tank, and not just in my work, which we all do probably well, but in my relationships, in my family, in my passions, in my art, in every aspect of my life. I want to be a person that empties the tank to where people that are around me say, man, you know, when I'm around Kurt, man, there's something, there's an energy that just comes, and in some way I'm rejuvenated. In some way, I might even be a bit redeemed or moved on a step further. And, you know, as I thought about that, I thought, you know, we probably all want that. We all want to be those kinds of people. And one of the things I've also learned about this is that, you know, it also requires us to empty the tank in order for us to create those things. You know, for many of us, we probably do one area really well where we just empty the tank, and yet God created us to empty the tank in multiple areas in our lives. So, you know, if it's worth doing, it's worth going all out in. And so, you know, we can only really be fully refilled or refueled when we empty ourselves, when we pour ourselves into whatever it is that we're about. And so I'm really excited about these next 4 weeks because we're going to be taking a look at what God says about recreating, about recreating, about what it means to kind of recreate ourselves, what it means to tap into this activity, this whole idea of play, of recreation, this idea of not just going after and pouring ourselves and emptying the tank into our work, but what does it look like when we empty ourselves into our relationships, into fun, into down times? And so, you know, over these next weeks, we're going to really be focusing on this. And we spent a week here, a week there, but we're going to spend 4 weeks on this topic because this is something that God builds into the normal patterns of our life. In fact, Jesus did this. And so, you know, if you hear nothing else over the course of these 4 weeks, or maybe you're here one time and you're not coming back next weekend, or you fall asleep in the next 3 minutes, here's the one thing I really want you to grasp right here, that play, when you recreate, when you recreate through play, it takes you out of the rut of just getting by. And I think for many of us this morning, we're probably feeling a bit like, man, I'm just getting by. I feel like I'm so stretched and I'm never being refueled and I'm just barely eking it out. And so we're gonna take a look at this. We're going to take a look at what this means over the next few weeks. Really excited about that. And my name is Kurt, by the way. I'm the lead pastor here at Cross Point. And thanks again, Steve. Let's thank Steve again for leading this morning. Somebody on the way in said, man, actually, on the way out, they're like, man, he was better than the actual boss. I mean, he actually hits the notes on key. And so we thank him for pulling that off for us. Hey, let's pray before we do anything else. God, I'm thankful we can come into a place like this, a place where we can, you know, kind of focus and deal with issues that we really don't talk about in many other places. We may have fun, we may have recreation planned, but there's not many places where we actually talk about how you created us for this. You created this to be a normal part of our routine and of our pattern. And I just have this sense, this feel that many of us this morning have been emptying the tank in maybe one or two areas of our life, but we're feeling very little refreshment, very little rejuvenation, and we're just in need of that being refilled today. And so I pray that you would help us to maybe see things that we haven't previously seen, regardless of our spiritual background, spiritual orientation. Just help us to, just meet us exactly where we are. Help us to maybe see something that allows us to go to that next place. Pray these things in your name and according to your character. Well, you know, Gallup polls is the Gallup organization is arguably probably the number one organization in the world that has a pulse on what the populi of the world think. And a few years ago, back in like the 2005, 2009, they did this survey across the world trying to identify who are the happiest nations of the world. And the Washington Post just recently revealed some of the results of the survey. And it was kind of fascinating what they were. And so I'm going to put these up here. Here's the top 10 happiest countries of the world. Who do you not see there? Who do you see? Who do you see? What do you think? Who do you notice isn't there? Yeah, the good old USA, right? I mean, where's our American pride on this deal? I mean, seriously, Australia beat us on this, all right? Australia, you know how Australia got formed? This was England sending their convicts to the continent of Australia to set up camp. And they are happier than you and I today, all right? All right, now look at this. Israel, number seven. Israel, come on. They've been arguing over, you know, a whole bunch of things for hundreds, thousands of years, primarily this little strip of land called the Gaza Strip. And let's be honest, it doesn't even come close to any piece of land here in the United States of America. That's my opinion, of course. But they beat us. They beat us. Canada. Anytime you get beat by Canada, except in hockey, it is not a good thing. So you know, as you look at this, we are not, friends, we are not by any metric a happy nation. We are not. I mean, we're happy about the things that we accomplish. We're happy about the things that maybe we've accumulated, the things that we've attained. But by most metrics, we are not a happy nation. And here's what I would deduct from this. These countries have learned something that we are still in process on. These countries have built in times to recreate and play. They understand the value, spiritual or unspiritual, it doesn't matter. They understand the value of recreation. In about half of these countries, they have a work week that's about 5 to 10 hours less than ours. They value time that is down, time to refresh, time to refuel. And so, you know, I really want us to go after this hard over these next few weeks because I think many of us are just eking by. We're just getting by. And God desires so much more for us than that. And so, you know, we're going to look at some big things over these next few weeks. The first one I really want us to go after today is this idea right here, that recreation or recreating or playing is how you refuel. Now, we get that with our heads, all right? And some of us aren't going to be happy with today because you like to come in here and get all kinds of good information to think about, but you don't like to go do anything. And so, you know, this is going to be a day where you're going to have to go do something, and recreation is how we refuel. Now, I don't know about you, but when I read that quote by John Stewart and what he said about Bruce Springsteen, I want to be that kind of person. I want the people around me to say, man, Kurt emptied the tank. And what he does at Crosspoint, he empties the tank. With his family, when he's having fun, he empties the tank. In his passions, he empties the tank. And as you think about that, I know what some of us are probably thinking. You're thinking, I don't have anything left to empty. I mean, I pour myself into my work, and when I get home at the end of the day, man, I have no time left for my family. I have no time left for fun. I have no time to recreate. Well, you know, there's a guy by the name of Lewis Grant, and he actually has a term for this. Here's what it's called. It's called sunset fatigue. Now, if you're in a leadership role in any way, shape, or form, whether it's here at Crosspoint, in your work, in our community, you need to put this idea of a sunset fatigue. You need to make this one of your leadership dashboards right here. One of the places where you watch the gauge and determine how this is playing out in your life. Because sunset fatigue is when you come home at the end of a day's work and those who need our love the most, those whom you're most committed to, end up getting the leftovers. It's where you come home at the end of the day and you're like, I'm too tired, I'm too drained, I am too preoccupied for the people who I have the greatest commitments to, and they just get the scraps. And it ends up playing out in like sharp words with your spouse or, you know, in sibling arguments as soon as you walk in the door because there's a tension because you're just drained. I mean, you'll set up like mock races at home. You'll be like, hey, kids, we're going to see who can take the bath the fastest tonight. And it's nothing. It's nothing about needing to be fast about a bath. It's all about what you need, which is about your kids just doing it as quick as possible because you're just trying to get by. And what happens is we lose this sense of awe. We lose this sense of wonder in life. And Lewis Grant says that when sunset fatigue sets in, he says you begin to engage in self-destructive behaviors. Begins to play itself out in self-destructive ways. He says it plays out in things like abusing alcohol. In watching too much TV and like listening to country music. He says these are the things that, because that never refreshes or rejuvenates you, right? I mean, there's nothing about that that's helpful. And so, as we, you know, over these next weeks, we've titled this series, You've Got Mail, but the tagline is probably more critical. Words to live by for a life that's more than getting by. And so we're going to be taking a look at some of the words of Jesus. In fact, today we're going to start in Mark chapter 1. So if you have a Bible, you can turn there. And today is unique because we're going to look not just at the words of Jesus today, but today is probably more about the actions of Jesus. This is more about what Jesus is modeling for us as opposed to just what he's saying here. And so, you know, you talk about a guy that had a lot of demands on his life. I mean, Jesus, everybody wanted to plug into him. Everybody was wanting a little of his time, a piece of him. Everybody's wanting to be, you know, touch him, to be healed by him. You know, people who were broken, who were sick, who were lonely. You know those people that are EGRs. You know what EGRs are? Extra grace required people. You know, those people that you're like, man, when I interact with him, I got to have a lot of extra grace. He had these people all around him all the time. His family wanted to plug into him. His friends wanted to plug into him. And yet the one thing that Jesus did in every situation was he emptied the tank. He emptied the tank. And you know, I don't know that you can be as integrated a person as Jesus without you know, playing and having fun and laughing and taking times to refuel and recreate yourself on a regular basis. And so we're going to make some general assumptions as we read through this and read between the lines about what Jesus did in some of his time. And yet, you know, people were drawn to Jesus like a magnet. And it wasn't just because of his teaching. It wasn't just because, you know, he had the ability to heal people. I believe that just being around him rejuvenated people. It was something about how he poured into people and how he had fun and how he engaged in every aspect of life that people said, man, when I am around Jesus, life is just different. And I think at the core, we want to be that kind of people. And so in Mark chapter 1, you know, Jesus is, people are just beginning to realize who this person Jesus is. I mean, they're watching. They're like, man, there's something different about him. And Jesus was leaving the synagogue, one of his first public appearances in the synagogue. And he's leaving and he's walking to his friend's house with Simon, Peter, and Andrew. And Peter's mom had been sick. His mother-in-law actually had been sick. And Jesus' friends, they're like, hey, Jesus, did you know that Simon's mother-in-law is sick? You need to go to her house. She's about ready to die. You need to go and like help her and heal her. And so immediately Jesus goes to her house and he touches her, he grabs her hand, and he literally raises her up, and she's healed, she's well, and it says she begins serving them. Now, I think this just shows us that Jesus has a sense of humor right here, because, I mean, I think Peter was like, seriously, Jesus, of all the people you could have brought back from nearly death, why was it my mother-in-law? I mean, you know, couldn't you have chosen somebody else? But this is what Jesus did. This is what Jesus did, and as soon as that happened, word began to spread around the area. And people are like, hey, did you hear who's around? Jesus is here. Jesus is here. And here's what it says in verse 32. It says, that evening after sunset, the people brought Jesus all of the sick and demon-possessed. I want to stop a moment. This phrase, after sunset, is key right here because you see in the Jewish culture, you work from sun up to sundown. That was the workday, 12 hours, sun up to sundown. And so it says, after sunset, Jesus is still engaging in his calling. This just shows us, man, he emptied the tank. He emptied the tank. You know, sometimes we're like, man, I got to have a balanced life. I want a balanced life. You know what? Balanced life is for you know, people who you know, don't have much margin in their lives. You know, balanced life, I heard it said recently that the only place that people are balanced is in the cemetery. Right? When you're in the cemetery, in the ground, you're balanced. You're going to be heavily engaged in one part of life in certain seasons, heavily engaged in other parts of life in other seasons. Balance is never going to be fully attained because you know what the problem is with balance? When you're balanced across the board, you're never really fully engaged in anything. You're never fully engaged in anything. Jesus doesn't model that for us. He's fully engaged in everything. And so after sunset, he's healing the sick and the demon-possessed. It says the whole town gathered at the door. Get that, the whole town. Jesus healed many who had various diseases, and he drove out many demons. So basically the whole community, they come and gather around Jesus. They want to plug into Jesus. They want to take from Jesus. They want to be healed. They want to be well. They want to say, hey, if I can just touch him. Here's what Jesus does next, verse 35. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, he left the house, and he went off to a solitary place. And among other things, what he did there, he prayed. He prayed. He got away to a solitary place, which was a place where people weren't saying, hey, there he is, there he is, where he could just be a normal person. And you walk into Kroger, and you know, when I walk into Kroger, people are like, hey, Kurt, I don't know who they are. I don't know if they're from Cross Point. I don't know if, you know, the kids from my parents, from my kids' school. You know, Jesus, that was like 1,000 times. Everywhere he went, people knew who he was. He had to get away to solitary places. One of the things he does is he prays. He connects with his heavenly Father. He takes some time to rejuvenate, to be refueled, because he knew that this was what he needed to do in order to be on when he needed to be on. And notice what he does next. The next morning, the disciples, his friends, they wake up. He's not there. So they go out and find him. You know what they say to him? Jesus, everybody's looking for you. And notice his response in verse 38 here. Let us go somewhere else. Let us go somewhere else. Let us go to nearby villages so I can preach there also. That is why I have come. So in verse 33, everybody wants to plug into Jesus. Everybody needs something from Jesus. And everybody wants their needs met. And Jesus says, hey, I've done my work here. It's time to go somewhere else. You know what's fascinating here? Is Jesus doesn't get after it, just get up and get after it again. He realizes he needs to go somewhere else. He needs to take some time to refuel and to refresh. He models for us this process of emptying the tank and then taking time to rejuvenate so that he can be on again. Another time, again, early in Jesus' ministry, the gospel writer Mark, this is Mark recording kind of biography in Jesus' life, says the apostles gathered around Jesus. They reported him all they had done and taught. And then because so many people were coming and going, they did not even have a chance to eat. And so he said to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Now, the word rest here is interesting because you and I think of rest as going to sleep, of kicking our feet up, of taking a nap. You know, rest really in this culture meant to cease labor. When you were not working, you were resting, you were recreating, you were playing. It's a lot broader than closing your eyelids to sleep. All right, and so rest is to cease labor. And so, you know, Jesus is modeling, again, this emptying himself and saying, hey, you have had no time. You need to come away with me and you need to recreate yourselves. You need to recreate. And what he's basically saying is, hey, you can't go at a pace like this. You're going to fry. You're going to burn out. You're going to come to the place where you're just eking by. You need to have a time of recreating. You see, Jesus recognized the need to refuel. In another encounter, and again, this one's interesting as well because these all happened early in Jesus' ministry. I mean, he was ministering for 3 years. This is how he began. This isn't like what he learned along the way. This is how he began. In Luke 5, we see a man with leprosy come to him. And leprosy was like the worst of all diseases. I mean, leprosy, you know, a leper had to like yell out everywhere they went, unclean, unclean, so that people could like create a 20-foot barrier and could just walk around them so no one came in contact. I mean, a leper, you could see from a long distance away, you could see their skin just flaking up and kind of a white flaky scab. I mean, it was the worst of diseases. And this man just comes and throws himself at Jesus' feet face down. And he pleads, he begs with Jesus, Jesus, you got to heal me. And Jesus, he reaches down and he heals the man. He raises him up. The leprosy is cleaned off. He says, go check with the priest, see that you're clean. And take a look again at what Jesus does right after this. Verse 16, it says, but Jesus often withdrew. He went to lonely places. So we see this pattern here of Jesus regularly emptying the tank in everything he does, and then he goes and he refuels. He empties the tank in play. He empties the tank in prayer. He empties the tank in the other activities that actually create a refueling of who he is. I mean, notice this pattern. He's on, and then he's off. He's engaged, and then he's disengaged. He's with people, and then he's not with people. And here's the cool thing. I mean, he changes the course of human history in 3 years. 3 years. And he does nothing a lot during those 3 years. Nothing. He gets away and does nothing. Now, as we think about this, you know, there's so many things related to recreating and playing and in our reality today that the Bible doesn't really speak to. And primarily this is because, you know, scientifically we've advanced our methods. We understand things like neuroscience and neurochemistry way more than people did back then. And so, you know, we can actually put electrodes on our brain and on the base of our skull. And we can measure stimuli. You know, when certain things happen in our lives, we can measure what that does for our energy levels and our brain activity. And so we know now in an increased way how things work. And so I want you to say this phrase with me right here on the screens. I want you to say this with me. The opposite of, okay, this is where you like say this with me, okay? All right, let's go at it. And then you fill in the blank together. The opposite of play is, see, this is funny. Every time this happens, the opposite of play, about half of you said rest, all right, which isn't really the right answer, no offense, but you know, rest is really the same as play. It's recreating, it's downtime, it's not working, it's refueling. And those of you who put work in there or productivity, you're like every other unhealthy American on the planet. All right, we always think that the opposite of play is productivity or work. No, that's not what it is. I mean, we somehow associate play as something children do, or play is what I do when I'm not being productive or doing anything important, and work is what I do when I'm productive. No, that's not it at all. Scientifically, in terms of neurochemistry, what happens in your brain as we measure this when you're playing? Here's the opposite of what happens when you play. It's called depression. This is what it's called. Scientists have found the connections, the synaptic connections that happen in your brain when you're playing, the direct opposite of that is what takes place when people are depressed. Now, I need to say, kind of give a disclaimer. Depression is a broad, broad thing. And it's a deep thing for some of us. And so I don't want to undersell or under present the significance of this. And yet at the same time, here's the boiled down thing for the purposes of what I'm talking about today. All right, scientifically, depression is when neurochemically you get in a rut. It's when you get in a rut. It's when the same synaptic connections in your brain are firing in the same ways through the same synaptic connectors all the time. It's where you're constantly fixating on how you're a victim or how you're constantly fixating on your fears or how you're constantly fixating on work and work and work and how can I be better? The only way I'm going to get ahead is if I do more. It's where the same synaptic connectors are firing through the same channels and you're using a very, very little part of your brain. And you see, this is where depression comes in. When those same patterns, same connections happen over and over and over with nothing new. And what scientists have discovered is that when you play, it actually expands your synaptic connections. It actually expands your neural connections in your body, and it creates new connections. It creates creativity. This is why this idea of play actually takes you out of the rut of just getting by. I mean, this isn't just a fun thought right here. This is a spiritual thought right here. Play actually takes you out of the rut I'm just getting by. You know, this is why play is the opposite of depression. Have you ever noticed how after you play, I mean, you go out and do something, all of a sudden you're like, man, I just had a really creative moment right here. Or, you know, you engage in full all-out play and you all of a sudden have a new insight or you're out jogging and that's your best thinking moments because the new synaptic connections are challenging, they're stretching your brain and it's actually allowing you to be creative. I mean, this is why, you know, you might go out and have a great night of play, and the next day you're like, man, I am way more productive today at work. It's because of play. Now, some of us, we're depressed. I mean, we're just down. We're feeling very flat today. It's because we've lost this capacity. We have the same connections happening in our brain over and over through the same channels, and we're just getting a level of depression. And, you know, here's what I've figured out. Here's one thing I've figured out. I mean, life just slap wears us out. I don't know about you, but my life, I mean, life just can wear you out. And when you play, it's the revenge on life that beats us down. It's the revenge on life. It's a way to escape it. And, you know, there's a lot of forms of play. I mean, and you can like go to a game and there's a social connection that can happen when you're viewing something together, when you're watching something, that's a form of play. There's rituals of play that you might go through in an ordinary week where you engage in some kind of activity. But the refueling I really want to talk about today, I really want to focus in these last few minutes, is this idea of 3D play. Now, 3D play is when you're engaged in the kind of play that children engage in, right? I mean, it's things like building tree houses and going back and forth on teeter-totters and bicycles and hopscotch and, you know, has anybody ever like spun around on a merry-go-round recently till you just puked off the edge? Remember how fun that was? I mean, you just like kept going and going and the responsible adults in the room were like, oh, those were terrible. I hated those things. They're so unsafe. Well, you know, that's 3D play right there, all right? And so I'm going to show you something. And if you're a responsible adult, you're not going to like this. All right, so here's one of the ways my family, just this past week, 3 days ago, here's one of the ways, amidst a heavy demand time, here's one of the ways we escaped and played for a moment. Take a look.
Be really good or really bad.
I mean, this was the coolest thing. I mean, I didn't plan to show you that. We just taped that because we're like, this is going to be really cool. And my wife is like, oh, man, this is going to be good or it's going to be bad. All right, and so, and I know some of you are like, oh, that's so cool. Where is that hill at? We just found that on a bike ride this week. We were riding, and we're like, kids, look at that hill right there. And we rode up it. And the responsible people in this audience, you're like, I can't believe he doesn't have a helmet on. And I can't believe his children were behind him in the burly down that thing. And, you know, here's the deal. Listen. I remember when my oldest daughter, I took her out to bike ride with a neighbor for the first time. And our neighbor came out, and she looked like she was going to war in Afghanistan. I mean, she had a helmet and elbow pads and wrist pads and knee pads. And I'm like, are we riding bikes or are we going to war? Because, I mean, I thought riding bikes, you just got on the bike. And, I mean, you know, we're like all out, go all ahead. Now, our kids, you know, if it has wheels, we generally like them to have helmets on. But we don't, you know, we don't necessarily go that way. And so, you know, and some of you don't like that. That's all right. You're not going to like everything I say. But, you know, here's the deal. There's something magical about play. There's something magical about when we engage, whether you're a climber or a golfer or a fisher or a crafter or a putter together of whatever things. I mean, you know, there's something that happens when we're 3D engaged in all-out play. I mean, you know, and now there's nothing inherently wrong with some of the other ways we play. I mean, you know, some of us, we like to play like this. I mean, imagine a 7-year-old playing. This is not really 3D play. With the slot machines, you're like, and you walk away, man, I'm really rejuvenated because of what I just experienced. You don't see that very often. Or, you know, you don't, like, see this very often, you know, sitting there. Man, I just feel so alive. My little guy just killed him. I mean, you know, this doesn't happen. This is not 3D play. And it's not like I'm not anti-video games. I am anti-rotting your brain without creating new synaptic connections and, like, expanding yourself, though. See, there's something. 3D interactive play is critical. It's critical. This kind of play is primal to us. Now, let me jump to the other side of the page for just a moment. All right, you know, I know that life gets us down. I mean, life can be weighty. And, you know, life is very weighty for me right now. Let me be honest. I mean, I'm in one of the weightiest seasons of my life right now. And you know, for those of us who call Crosspoint our home place, our home base, you know, you know the journey we're on. You know the things we're going after and that we're about here. And, you know, when I was reading John 10, this stuck out to me. Here's what Jesus said. He said, I am the good shepherd. He said, I am the good shepherd. And a good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. What Jesus is saying, he's like, I am a good shepherd. I'm not a hireling. You know what a hireling is? A hireling was a day shepherd. It was a day shepherd that walked around and got hired from day to day in different fields. A day shepherd felt no ownership, no obligation for the sheep, for their safety, for what was going on around them. And so, you know, hirelings, if they were in the field and a lion came into the field, they'd step back and like, whoa, this was not a part of my contract this morning when I signed up. I mean, this is not a part of what I ever signed up for here. I'm going to just kind of quietly dismiss myself. You good shepherds don't do that. Jesus says, I'm a good shepherd. I don't have to do that. Jesus says, hey, if a lion comes into the field, when a lion comes, man, I'm like, hey, this is my problem right here. This is my problem. This lion is my problem. It's my responsibility to lay myself down for these sheep. You see, here's what I've been discovering. The closer you get to Jesus, the more responsibility you're going to take for the world's problems. Let me say that again. The closer you get to Jesus, the more responsibility you will take for the world's problems. You know, you're not going to step back and go, oh, man, that's not my problem. You're not going to see people, you know, who are struggling in their marriage and say, man, I'm glad that's not me. That's not my problem to work out right there. The closer you get to Jesus, you take responsibility. I mean, you know, when you see somebody stuck in addiction, you don't go, man, I sure hope the next president has a solution for that. No, you see, the closer you get to Jesus, you increasingly begin to realize that, hey, the problems around me, the people that are stuck in addictions, the people who are stuck in a religion and it's not really bringing freedom to their life, hey, I have a responsibility in that. I'm going to get passionate about that because I'm a divine image bearer of the God who created me. And the more I'm connected with him, the more my passions are going to reflect his passions. Let me tell you how this is playing out for me right now. You know, this means a lot because last weekend we just celebrated the second anniversary of our crazy journey. A great, great celebration, as Eric said. And, you know, I shared last weekend how we're moving forward. I mean, we're looking to break ground late this fall on this new launch pad for Crosspoint, this launch pad for real people, this real home for real people right here in our community. Because we feel the weight of the people all around us that need to see Jesus and experience Jesus for who he really is. I mean, there are people every week that I run into that aren't really sure of who Jesus is. And we need to help them experience Jesus in a new way, in a way that average people and fishers are not currently experiencing. And there are people all around me, they've turned off to God, they've turned off to religion, and this is a problem. And we're taking ownership for this. We're saying, hey, we want to do something. This is what Jesus would do. It's a problem. There are people all around us that have got their patriotism confused with their religion, and they've got their idolatry religion with, like, ambition, and they've got judgmentalism confused with what it means to be somebody who's running after the heart of God. I mean, these are problems. This isn't what Jesus calls us to. He calls us to this beautiful revolution. It actually changes our hearts. We live and we're rejuvenating and we're people who are redeeming in the community. You know, we fall weight on this. You know, this is why this fall, you know, this crazy journey is going to materialize. I mean, we're going to break ground later this fall. And by the way, keep praying. I mean, people say, hey, man, we're praying for this. Keep praying. Keep praying. But let me tell you what, praying is not going to necessarily take it any further. But you need to keep doing it. Keep praying. Yeah, I can't stand when somebody's like, oh, I'm going to pray for you on that. I'm like, that's great, but it's going to take more than that. You know, keep volunteering. I mean, we had a big ask weekend a number of months ago. And we said, you know, the big ask is, you know, if you're a part of this place, volunteer 2 times a month minimum to be a blessing to people around here. You know, be a blessing. You know, it helps you grow. It helps connect you to God in increased ways. But it also helps you to be a blessing to accomplish, you know, what God's calling this place to do. So keep doing it. But that's not necessarily going to get it there. You know, cash is going to get it there. I mean, it's going to take an increased investment. That's the weight I carry every day. It's the weight I carry every day. And the cash is going to be higher because, you know, God's dreams always outpace what we have. And it's not just true for Crosspoint. It's true for any church community that's going after something. God's dreams always outpace what we're given. It's why it's called a journey, because God is growing us through it. He's growing us. He's helping us learn what it means to trust, to obey, to listen. And so, you know, in these intense times where I feel like, man, I feel the weight of this right now. I mean, these intense times, I am more diligent to come to those places where I ask myself the question, Kurt, how are you playing? How are you enjoying God? How are you finding pleasure? How are you disconnecting from just emptying the tank into work so you can empty the tank into your family and into time with your kids and into passions and friendships? And I'm trying to be very strategic this summer to empty the tank. In fact, you know, as I look at my calendar, I have no time for vacation this summer, and yet I'm taking more than I've taken any other summer to date in my life. Because I realize that when I disconnect and refuel, I'm actually better at emptying the tank in what I do. And so this is how I handle the pressure. I mean, we're going to be doing things like shooting model rockets later in the week out of our backyard. And we live in an HD neighborhood, which is not high def, it's high density. Which means you shoot those things and they're landing on people's houses and cars and, oh, it's a lot of fun. You know, we had water wars a couple weeks ago. We're going to have another one here in the next week or two, you know, with water cannons and, you know, 100 water balloons. And we just go at it in our backyard, and the neighbors are like, what are they doing? We're 3D playing. That's what our kids love to do. We get involved in it with them. You know, the first day school was out, my kids were up at 6, and they're like, hey, let's go to the park. And so we were at the park at 7:15 in the morning, Brook School Park. Anybody drove by there lately? You know how busy it always is? We were the only ones there. The kids were like, look, we got it all to ourselves. I might get 7:15. That's why nobody's here. I don't think anybody's even thinking about this. I'll tell you what, that was my most creative day of that week, starting off playing at the park. I mean, these are some of the things that allow us to recreate ourselves when the demands, it's in a very real sense how we kind of defeat the weight that comes in life. And honestly, if I can be really honest, I'm trying to find out how I can continually have pleasure and enjoy life because I don't want to lose my relationship with God. This is one of the ways I do it. It's one of the ways I experience God. In fact, there's probably some of us here right now this morning who, you know, we've not aligned with God. I mean, we were maybe here for the first time, or you've been checking us out, and you're not even sure, you know, you believe Jesus is really who he says that he is, and you're sitting there thinking, you know, this is kind of interesting. I mean, this is really interesting because, you know, the people that I know that say they're after God, they're not having much fun in their life. I mean, they're not having much fun. They're just getting by. They're just eking by. This is why I'm so excited about this series that we're spending 4 weeks on what it means to recreate ourselves and recreate and play and invest in friendships and relationships and just empty the tank in all areas of our life. In fact, one of the greatest reasons that people don't receive the grace of Jesus is because they look at people who say they have received the grace of Jesus, and like, man, they just look like they've received a mouthful of sour grapes. They just got a bitter look on their face all the time. They're always just bitter, and like, that's not what I thought this was about. It's a bad witness. And so, you know, C.S. Lewis, an apologist, former atheist, agnostic, eventually great Christian writer, in a letter to one of his friends, he said, it is a Christian duty, as you know, for everyone to be as happy as they can. Now, there's a lot of things that could be a duty, but pick out this is about right here. It's a duty for us to be as happy as we can. And, you know, when we live that way, man, we're transmitting that, man, God is a God of love and a God of pleasure and a God of goodness. And, you know, people are rejuvenated around us. People are even redeemed at times because there's something that comes out of us that just blesses them in a new way. Man, I want to be that kind of person. This is why play. This is why play takes you out of the rut. It takes you out of the rut of just getting by. It'll take you out of the rut. So we're going to sing a song here in just a moment. And most of what we sing around here are prayers. These are just like prayers put to words. And this song's going to talk about, you know, just awakening us. And, you know, I believe God maybe needs to awaken some of us this morning just to maybe see our lives as he sees us and maybe to see the ruts that we're in. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, man, I'm stuck in a rut and I don't know what to do to get out of it. Well, maybe the most spiritual thing you can do this week is play. You can go recreate and begin to recreate who you really are. I mean, you have to ask yourself, you know, where do I empty the tank and what does that say about me? What does that say about what I value? Where do I empty the tank and who else is missing out because they never get any good piece of me? I mean, maybe you're that sunset, you know, fatigue. Maybe you're like, man, that's me. I go home every day. I'm too tired for anything, including fun. And maybe God wants to begin to create a different trajectory and begin to instill a pattern, a rhythm of recreating you on a regular basis. I'll venture to say that some of us probably have marriages that are struggling, that are in need of refueling, relationships with kids that need to be refueled. And you're just like, God, what, when are you going to refuel this? When are you going to refresh this thing? Well, here's the deal. You know, when you're not pouring much into it, you don't really feel it when it gets refilled. If you're pouring minimal into it, you can't really tell what it feels like to get refreshed because there's you're not really pouring anything out. You know, the only places we really fully fill like we've been refueled is when we actually empty the tank. So you're like, man, there's a difference here. So we're going to sing this. And I just ask you to open up and say, you know, God, what are you saying to me today? Where do I need to empty the tank? Where do I need to be refueled as we go into this week? So let's stand, and Steve and the band are going to lead us here.